This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
By popular demand, Place to Be Nation Wrestling returns to the Dirty South for Talkin' WCW, an episodic wrestler showcase designed to educate, evaluate, and entertain, with matches spanning the intimate stage of Techwood Studios to the heights of Space Mountain. Talkin' WCW presents the best, worst, and most surreal offerings from World Championship Wrestling. So cast your gaze to the Turnertron with hosts Jennifer Smith, Tim Capel, and Greg Phillips.
Hi, welcome to Talkin' WCW. That's right. You heard that right. My name is Jennifer Smith. I'm here with the William Regal to my Stephen Regal. Tim Capel, how you doing, Tim?
I'm doing pretty good, Jenny. It's a hard-fought episode here of Talking WCW. I know that you folks have not heard us for a little while. It's because we're feuding. We're all fighting, in fact. No. Although that would make for...
Kayfabe, motherfucker.
That would be make for great drama. Not for want of trying. Like, we seem to be getting sabotaged over and over, trying particularly to get this episode off the ground for whatever reason. So anyway, here we are, fingers crossed that you are actually hearing this. We should, without further ado, bring in our third Steve Regal. Did you know that there's a fake Steve Regal? We need to talk about this.
Mm-hmm. So Mr. Electricity.
Yes, we need to bring in Mr. Electricity, Greg Phillips, the other Steve Regal. How are you, Greg?
I'm doing quite well, lady and gentlemen. I was hoping for the real man's man, but I understand why that wouldn't be appropriate. So well, Mr. Electricity will have to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I admire Jenny's restraint in not putting that one on me, but
it's well, y'all have to, you know, clue me in, smart me up.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll kind of get there in a way. Not that we'll watch any of those matches because they weren't WCW.
Right.
And there probably weren't even three of them. So
I watched one of them the other night, oddly enough. I watched one of them because I was curious if he ever actually wrestled in that gimmick. And so I pulled up some random match on some whatever their third show was in those days. And
Jacked or Metal.
Yeah, one of those two.
Not even like it's sub WCW, Saturday Night Shotgun tier. Right. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, it kind of blew my mind. We're talking about the wrestler, Steven, sometimes known as William Regal, by the way, that everyone's quite familiar with, his lordship. I was, I was watching some matches from the 80s, came across, you know, the Great American Bash Tour, which WWE Network has some of those shows on. Weren't pay-per-views, more like supercards than pay-per-views, really, right? Back when Great American Bash was a touring event. And I see listed Mr. Electricity, Steve Regal versus Sam Houston. And, I had no idea that this existed, and I'm thinking this is our Steve Regal, right?
Of course.
I'm like, holy shit, he was wrestling back in the 80s? What? And that happens sometimes. Like, you look at, you'll see, like, a Malenko or a Guerrero on some of these old WCW shows.
Yeah. I believe that Barry Horowitz at one time wrestled as Bret Hart.
Yes, that's... But anyway, I started to watch the match, and I'm like... And it was funny because from the thumbnail, who they showed was actually Sam Houston, but he kind of looked like Steve Regal. I was like, well, that's got to be him. And I was like, I don't know, that's just Sam Houston and some guy. I'm like, why am I watching this?
Poor Mr. Electricity. Just some guy. That man has a family, damn it.
So disrespectful.
So, but anyway, that was quite eye-opening. I felt rather foolish but also educated at the end of this ordeal.
And also, Tim, if I remember correctly, when he first came to WCW, like his first like maybe two appearances, he was known as Steve Regal in 1993 before he became Steven Regal. Tony was referring to him as Steve Regal, and he was just kind of a plucky new foreigner from England who was going to make an impact in WCW.
Right, right. And so that is who we're going to be talking about. This was chosen by me. I think I had a rationale at the time of choosing him, and I don't remember what that is.
No, because we picked him like 4 months ago.
So. Yeah, it was like 4 months ago. Who can say? But,
what is time?
What is time even? Not to say I regret that choice at all. I'm a big, always have been a big Steven / William Regal fan. And he's so interesting to me because he got kind of an early start in WCW. As you said, Greg, going back to really early 1993, comes in, works this, you know, the foreign stereotype kind of gimmick that they would do back then. And I don't know, you just wouldn't think that a character like that would have the sort of longevity that he did. But I mean, he was so good in ring, so good at the character, that you could do a lot worse than having just a Steve Regal on your roster to hold down the fort. Even if he was never going to be in like the, you know, main event world title picture or anything like that. I can see why you would want someone of that caliber just to kind of carry some of your weaker, like, undercard shows, which is how I think he was used for a good stretch of the 90s. And what we're going to see, I think, examples of in this episode.
Yes, Lord Steven Regal was a favorite of mine as a child, too. I was I was always I always liked sort of the more eccentric and what I would say the more entertaining type heels, like Mr. Perfect in the WWF, or in WCW, Lord Steven Regal was one of those guys. Ric Flair was another one, but Regal was one of those dudes that, like, even though he was a heel, I loved him because I loved how over the top his mannerisms were and how entertaining his facial expressions were. I loved watching him bump off of the baby faces, and I used to, like, impersonate him a lot when I was a kid. So, like, when we would be playing wrestling with me and my cousins and stuff, I would often do his little mannerisms with the hand behind the back and the two fingers up and stuff like that. And, he was just a fun character. And you mentioned the longevity. I think that longevity that he had as that character for the better part of a decade in WCW was due to how good he was at it. I think he is the best ever at playing that sort of Regal Royal wrestling character, if you want to call it that. Like, I bought into his character way more than I ever bought into any of the sort of king characters in wrestling. Yeah. Jerry Lawler accepted, but that's a sort of a different deal. Right. But yeah,
more than Corbin, even.
Certainly, more than even King Corbin.
More than Baron Corbin, God.
More than Billy Gunn after he won the King of the Ring Championship trophy. But yes, Regal just had this air. I believed that he was that character. I believed that he was this super wealthy man from England who looks down on everybody around him and can't even bear the thought of. And he reminded me maybe, and Tim, you might get this as well. He reminded me a little bit of like a cartoon or comic book villain. Like of this just so hoity-toity, just not going to bother sullying himself with the likes of us. And I always found him super entertaining. And I think that's because because if it was just his wrestling was always good, but it was like, if it was just his wrestling, he would have been kind of a dry technical wrestler guy.
Yeah.
Had some good matches in there, but he had this character that made him, to me, more compelling than a lot of his sort of contemporaries at the time.
Now, come to think of it, if he had just gotten by on his wrestling alone, and that was what they kind of used as the hook, I still think it could have worked, but it probably would have precluded somebody like a Dean Malenko from having a spot.
I agree. He would have been a Dean Malenko before Dean Malenko, basically.
Yeah. And Dean Malenko would not have had a job at WCW if somebody was already doing that. But that's just one of those things that WCW was so good about, was just having a variety of different characters and people who could go in the ring and actually giving them pretty decent, moderate-sized pushes. Like, there is no way this would fly in like new generation era WWE.
Oh no, no, they had too. They were too busy having Dink roll his legs in the air, which was apparently hysterical.
Yeah, it's just different worlds. Just different worlds.
Yeah.
Where would you guys rank Regal on like the greatest TV title holders list?
He'd be number one for me.
Really?
Yeah, I'd have him over Arn even. Arn was great.
Wow.
Arn was great, but like I didn't grow up in the 80s era watching. I watched wrestling in the 80s, but you know, I was so little that I didn't process most of it other than guys with face paint good, Hulk Hogan good, everybody else bad. But then by the time the 90s rolled around, Regal was a TV champ for I feel like most of my time watching Nitro and Saturday Night and stuff like that. Arn was great too. Arn was that champ in sort of that late 80s, early 90s when I was big into it as well. But like something about Regal made me care about that title, and he made the title seem important to me. Like I viewed it obviously as secondary to the world title, but to me, most of the time, unless Sting was in the division, I always found the TV title more interesting than the U.S. title. And I think that was mostly true for the entirety of WCW, even up through the time that they retired the TV belt. When you think about Booker T and all those guys, Scott Steiner in the background, as you can hear,
it's coming to get you, man.
In my apartment.
But another great TV champion, yeah.
Another great TV champ, yeah. But yeah, to me, yeah, Regal would be my choice. I know people might say Tully Blanchard back in the 80s, and I can see that too. Tully was amazing. But just because of my own nostalgic look back, you know, you think of certain titles and you think of a certain person holding that title. For me, it was always Mr. Perfect with the Intercontinental title, and it was Lord Steven Regal with the TV title. So,
yep, I can see that. And I'd see your point too about it being one of the more interesting singles championships, and that they did a lot to differentiate it from like the U.S. title, which was just that one rung down from world championship, right? You know, the TV title has all the everything was about, you know, wrestling to the TV time limit and the way that that would be used as an out on many occasions, depending on who was holding the title and how they wanted to get them over or get their opponent over. You could do a lot of fun, creative things with that World Stevie Championship. But yeah, that's a great question too. And another one of those things where it worked so well, WCW in the 90s, how you had these very tiered divisions. You had your like TV title guys, you had US championship tier, you know, your world championship tier. You could kind of move people throughout all of them, just up and down the card. But I mean, it just gave it that, I really hesitate to use the word real sports feel, because I don't really like real sports, of course, but let's just say it contributes to the illusion of wrestling and what it wants to present.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I always viewed Arn Anderson as a TV title contender, because that's kind of where he was positioned, but I never viewed him as great a wrestler as he was. Right. And so was Regal. Regal was a great wrestler, but like,
yeah.
I never viewed them as world title contenders, but that's okay. They had their niche, their role that they fit into. And I viewed them as that. Whenever Muda was in, because he had been in the TV title division, I was always like, well, he could be in the TV title hunt. There were just certain guys, like you said, that tier system, it worked. And occasionally guys would elevate out of that tier. Probably not as much as they should have, honestly, but you're right. That added to that sort of feeling that these were real divisions that people were actually fighting over, instead of weight classes per se, like you would have in fighting, boxing, whatever. It was more of just like sort of these guys like this title, these guys like this title, you know. I completely agree. And it was also kind of the perfect heel title because of that time limit.
Yes.
Situation, that 15-minute or 20-minute time limit that they would have there. It's the perfect way for heels to exploit that and get heat and keep baby faces strong. And I thought that was really, really, I even appreciated that looking back, that it's something that the masters, Arn knew how to do that, Tully knew how to do that, and Regal knew how to do that. That time limit to his heelish advantage. Tremendous.
It was cool, too, because it was just like, it was all about the presentation to me. It didn't feel like a pecking order where someone like a Regal, an Arn, or, you know, if you mm-hmm. think of like a Johnny B. Badd or even like Bobby Eaton, you know, in that, again, World's TV title division, it wasn't so much that you didn't think they were good enough to compete for the U.S. title. It's just that because of the differences in how those belts were just presented to the audience, it was like, oh, well, mm-hmm. they train towards wanting to win and compete for the world's TV title versus the U.S. championship. Like, there is a difference in how you would prepare, you know, going for one belt versus another. It really, I feel like they got that across pretty well without making it feel like this is just the pecking order. And there's these guys who are below these guys who are below these guys. There's just a difference in how they would prepare for the matches and just go for one title versus another.
And it would be so cool when guys would elevate from that division mm-hmm. and try against the top tier guys. Like, that's why one of the matches we reviewed on an earlier episode of the show was Sting and Regal at Great American Bash 96, I believe it was.
Yep.
And that match was really cool because as a fan, you would expect Sting to just blow Regal away because he's two tiers above.
World
he's a world title contender. And instead, they're equals in that match. And that's why it was so cool because Regal is this guy that's perennially been in the TV title division, but he's good enough clearly to step up and push a, you know, a competitor like Sting to his limits. So in the grandiose kayfabe world of wrestling, that was pretty cool. That was an interesting sort of chemical to throw into the mix.
Mm-hmm. Totally. What do you remember? What your first impression, Jenny, was of Steve Regal?
It's funny because me being me and my weird tastes, you would think that most of this character would be kind of boring for me. But like Greg says, he has such a presence and he is such a fucking asshole that, you know, that the part of me that loves the heel just really kind of stuck to him. And then also my appreciation for more like technical wrestling kind of comes from him just because mm-hmm. he's really good at it, and he can combine those two seemingly opposite things in a very unique package. So I always kind of, in my mind, set him apart from most other wrestlers.
Yeah, like, he has that sort of, he comes obviously from that British wrestling style, which if you've seen, you know, Zack Sabre Jr. or Davey Boy Smith, Dynamite Kid, whoever you want to say, they have this very distinct grappling style there's no mistaking it when you see it. The way they get out of wrist locks, the way they get into different holds, it's not like a Dean Malenko style of technical wrestling is different. You know, it's like it's something that is very unique, and we haven't, for better or worse, in a major American wrestling, there haven't been that many ultra successful British stars in American wrestling. And so when you see somebody like Regal come along, he does stand out because so few people wrestle like that get into the holds and the joint locks and things like that.
It makes me focus on it, you know, like it makes me focus on the details of it and like appreciate it versus something that, you know, is stupid and fun that I normally like. So
and the beauty is he has that element too, because he's one of the best comedic performers ever in wrestling.
Yes.
Very self-aware too, like knows what buttons to push with the crowd, even while he does favor more of that technical style, which can admittedly be boring, like in the wrong hands, mm-hmm. when it's just about mm-hmm. getting over, like, oh, I'm the best. Yeah, I'm the best in-ring technician. And like, that's all well and good for you, but what does that do for the fans, really?
Particularly if it's one of those and Regal has had these before, where it's a match, I think particularly if his sort of mid-2000s WWE run, where there were a lot of matches where it was just kind of like laying in leg holds or whatever for what felt like an eternity. And it's like, you know, but when he turns on the aggression or he ups the antics, it's just, he has a way, generally had a way of keeping his matches interesting and motion feel, like they were fighting over holds. And I can get into those kind of technical matches where it kind of looks real. It looks like they're actually fighting over holds, you know, like like similar to something like a Pete Dunne Finn Balor match the other night. You know, like they're fighting to get hold of each other and inflict pain, and so you buy into that. So yeah, he's excellent in technical wrestling in a way that was more interesting to watch than a lot of the other sort of technicians. Which is, of course, I'm not slighting Dean Malenko. I know we mentioned him earlier because he was awesome too in his own way.
Oh yeah,
but
Platt more reserved, you know.
It was just different. Like there were a lot of guys that were good technical wrestlers in those days. Like I love him to death, but Brad Armstrong, amazing technical wrestler. Yeah. But he did not have the little character touches that Regal had that could really make him pop out to a crowd. So
those nuances that make all the difference.
Yep.
So, all right, well, we should dive into it here. And, you know, we talk so much about the World's Television Championship, and what we're going to see is a bit of a tour of this. We always kind of indirectly come up with a theme for these shows, I think, without trying. And this is going to be really Regal's dominance over that World's Television Championship. We did not choose matches all from the same year, but I believe they all are TV title matches.
Yes, they are.
So, spoiler, I guess, but we're going to see some of that greatness of Regal on display in that division.
And, really, really his best run. Like this sort of,
I think so.
Yeah. 2 or 3 year stretch was pretty strong.
Yeah, I mean, not that there's other. Believe me, this was a tough choice for this episode. Not because I was like, oh, I don't know if I should do this match or this. It was just like there were so many really good options that I'm like, man, I just need to pick one already because it's going to be hard to go wrong. I guess, am I kicking us off first here, going chronologically here?
Yep.
Yeah. So my match that I chose was from Fall Brawl 1993, the inaugural Fall Brawl. This was on September 19th. 1993 from the Astro Arena. It's in Houston, Texas. It is His Lordship Steven Regal versus Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. So one of the all-time greats here. I mean, how are you going to have a bad match with Ricky Steamboat in the first place? But
it's going to be rough, man.
Two phenomenal in-ring technicians here. You know, they have the potential to really tear the house down. So it's just a question of, are they going to get the time? Are they really going to reach that potential? And I submit that this match is a real hidden gem. Think it's one that people could easily overlook. It's not the only match that they had together, but I do believe it's their best. And this is the opener to Fall Brawl. Hell of an opener at that. You've got Regal coming out. Of course, he's with
William.
Yes, Sir William, who adds a great deal to the act.
Absolutely.
I mean, we got to give it up for him, too, which is, this is Bill Dundee, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it sure is.
What a role for Bill Dundee. Who, I mean, was he still working at this point?
I think in Memphis, maybe, but he was on the booking committee in WCW. Much maligned booking committee.
The much maligned booking committee.
I actually watched an interview with him the other day where he talked about the Sir William gimmick. He says that they were in a meeting and Dusty pitches the idea of what they're going to do with Regal. He says, we're going to make him love Steven Regal. He's going to be a blue blood. We need somebody to manage him. And then I can't remember who it was that he said that he suggested to manage him. And Dundee says, well, that doesn't make any sense. He's from like Arkansas or something. I'm from Wales, which is close to England. So it should be me. And Dusty, all right, you go manage him then.
Love the rationale.
I wonder why that booking committee is much maligned.
Well, we were all on that booking committee too. I mean, everyone in the world was on it.
Yeah, absolutely, it was the booking committee. Everyone except Tony Schiavone was on the booking committee.
Yeah. So anyway, all right, talk about the match. Steamboat is coming into this match with a rib injury, I gather. And I think he took a shot from the umbrella, like on a Saturday night preceding this, and that was kind of their mini feud. Steamboat is a low key good rib injury guy. I don't know.
Yes,
that's a weird thing to say. But I think
no. One of my first like thoughts in this match was like, I can't wait to watch him selling that rib injury.
And he does, and he does it again. Much earlier at I think it was Starcade. Was it the first Starcade? No, Starcade 84. His match with Tully.
One of my favorite matches.
The extended backstage interview talking about the pain in his floating ribs and how he can only stand on one foot, and just it really put over like, this guy's really hurting. So yeah, low key good rib injury guy. Regal's going to capitalize on that, of course. He's using a very, very strike heavy offense to start here, just a flurry, and trying to ground Steamboat. He works the arm, see a hammerlock, short arm scissor, that kind of stuff, which you would think, oh, this is working over the arm, but really, when you think about like your own anatomy and what happens when you stretch your arm in some of the ways that Regal is doing here, it's working those ribs. It's pulling up on the ribs. So that's what he's really going for here. So kind of sneaky, cool, what could be considered rest holds, but he's working them. He's really laying it in and keeping it interesting. We of course have to get a reversal out of the short arm scissor spot. I think that's kind of the only reason that move exists, is so that
yes,
but he can reverse out of it. But we see a reversal out of the reversal, which I've never seen before, which is like Regal just hangs on to it. And I'm like, holy shit. And it's just like one of those, again, little touches that just makes him a cut above the rest to me. So yeah, like Steamboat is just trying to hang on. Basically, every now and then he'll get a hope spot. He'll power out of a submission attempt. We get also, you know, I'm a great mark for a tombstone reversal sequence. Get one of those at one point in this match. Although I will say that Steamboat is a bit wussy.
Ricky
clearly wasn't comfortable doing that move.
No.
Right.
He want to hurt his opponent, credit to him, but God almighty.
Right. I mean, kudos to him for keeping it safe, I guess. But you
can but we're used to seeing the sort of Sting and Rick Rude where they just jump up and plant each other on that spot.
Yeah. Of course, you got to get a surfboard in there, continuing to work the ribs. Steamboat going for a vertical suplex towards the end of the match, but he's hurting, selling it, can't get it done, right? Regal does manage to get a very hard-fought butterfly suplex. They were kind of putting over. It wasn't like his finisher, although he probably did win just sort of, you know, jobber matches with it. But that's always like a cool looking move to me. Nice.
Oh, I love that move. I think it's underutilized. I'd like to see it more.
Nice double underhook suplex, but hard fought. And it's just, this is one of those matches where you realize what a great professional wrestling contest you can see between two guys who are such fundamentalists, is what it comes down to. For me, with these two, like there's no wasted motion. There's nothing. They're not doing moves just for the sake of doing moves.
Yeah,
right.
There's no holes in their game.
Yeah, and I admittedly can be kind of a move junkie, where I kind of like just seeing cool moves, because you know who doesn't? Flash is flash, and that's it is what it is. But with these two, like, they're not trying to get their shit in. They're only doing things that make sense within the context and the psychology of this match. So it's just a beautifully well-crafted technical display. Again, everything with purpose, everything makes sense. But just that little touch at the end, enhancing the heel character of Regal. He's not going to get the clean victory over Steamboat. We see that interference come in from Sir William clocking Steamboat after he, it's a great spot too, because Steamboat's doing that deal where he skins the cat back into the ring, which is a typical Steamboat spot, but it's like he almost flew too close to the sun, right? Taking the ball off the ball.
Look, I love that finish so much because it actually makes sense as to the timing of it too, because it makes sense that they would have scouted this particular move from Steamboat and waited for him to do the skin the cat, and the opportunity arises for Sir William to pluck him with the umbrella.
And Regal makes sure that the referee is out of position. He's got him distracted, like asking for the time, so Nick Patrick, whoever it was, doesn't see the umbrella shot, which, I mean, Steamboat really gets clocked on the way back in. And then, boom, deep, deep German suplex, bridge, and three count. So pretty convincing, sweet finish there. So, we have got our new World Television Champion in Lord Steven Regal. Awesome, awesome match here.
A match that impressed and upset all the Texicans out there. All the Texicans.
They're out there tending their horse stables, and they're very upset about the outcome of this match.
Still.
I loved it. It's so good. One of the things that comes across to me in all the matches that we're going to talk about is the precision timing of the finishes. Like, I've seen them be so bad that when they're good like this, you're like, oh my God, that's how it's supposed to go. Mm-hmm. Because it was just seamless and like a ballet, pretty much like the entire match was. And the crowd no-selling all of Regal's shit is just, it works. Like, it's what they're supposed to do, right? And like, it makes me angry, but I get it, and it's perfect. But I really loved him and Steamboat in this match. Great chemistry between them as well.
You know, you get what you get from this Texican crowd.
The Texican crowd. No appreciation for the greats. The commentary was really good in this match too.
Yes.
And I can't really say too much more than what you guys have said. Two great pro wrestlers that meshed well together. And this doesn't always happen. Sometimes guys that have sort of we've talked about this in the past in sort of our Blog of Doom days, Tim, about Regal did not always have great chemistry with everybody. Sometimes he would wrestle another really good wrestler and they would have bad chemistry because of sort of a style clash of sorts. That is not the case with Steamboat at all. They gel instantly here, have a great match. Like you said, under the radar, forgotten match from a really forgotten pay-per-view. And I thought that to both of your points, Regal's character work here, still building that character, that Lord Steven Regal character.
Mm-hmm.
He's still in the growing stages of that, but he already has such an idea of who he is and what Regal's style is. The fact that he can out-wrestle you, he just, at the end of the day, he's going to still do something underhanded to make you know that he's a villain, even though he's a good,
at any cost.
Yeah, he's what JR refers to as a wrestling heel, a heel that is very skilled and simply chooses to cheat because he's an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really good at it. He doesn't make it look bad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And he knows how to. And he knows how to. Ultimately, the role of great heels in wrestling is to accentuate the baby faces, and he does that great. Mm-hmm. He knows when to back off a little bit from Steamboat, when to look overpowered by Steamboat, how to sell the chops. There is one part in the match that I thought. Jesse brought up a great point when WWE still had that stupid over the top rope rule, and and Steamboat hurls Regal over the top rope and onto this ramp
very early in the match. Yeah,
and Tony makes the point that, well, remember, if this was to the arena floor, it would be a disqualification. And he goes, "Wait a minute, Tony Schiavone, why is it okay for him to throw him on the ramp? That doesn't make any sense."
You could throw him over the top rope on the ramp, but not the floor. I love it.
I don't know. That makes perfect sense to me, obviously.
It's because it's WCW.
The classic Ventura rant to Tony from, I think, SummerSlam 89. Or no, maybe it was Gorilla, but I think it was Tony when he's like, Why? Hell, it's on the arena floor. Why don't you just give him a gun and let Hogan shoot him?
Yeah.
It's on the arena floor.
He shot him outside the ring. Yeah, classic, classic Jesse stuff there. I also like with this finish that, and we pretty much already talked about this, but Steamboat does not look foolish in defeat. Like he didn't do something stupid like go after Sir William outside the ring or get counted out or something. Like he's doing a typical, you know, Steamboat spot, trying to, you know, keep from being injured essentially by flying outside of the ring, pulling himself back up. Has, you know, it would never occur to him that someone is going to attack him in the process of that outside the ring. So it's just sort of, you know, it speaks highly to the managerial capabilities of Sir William as well. But you know, Steamboat doesn't really lose any shine here in defeat. You know, these dastardly heels just managed to bend the rules, get away with it, and steal that championship.
Am I remembering correctly? I believe Steamboat hits his finish in this match, the flying body press, but he can't cover because the ribs are too injured.
He does. He
gets over there and makes the cover, and Regal kicks out, which is a big deal at the time, but he kicked out because Steamboat couldn't make the cover after he hit it because of his injury. So.
And earlier in the match, he went for like a standing splash, but hit knees. So again, just that craftiness of Regal. And I mean, that's the way you kind of do these finisher escape spots, right? It's not so much, oh, you kick out at two, which is like the big criticism today. Like, if somebody could get their finish in, but because you put in the work earlier in the match to prevent that finisher from actually finishing for a very good reason, then you get away with it without hurting the move or without hurting, you know, the opponent's credibility. So, I mean, there's clever ways to do this without everything just being, oh, kick out at two, which, I mean, can get a little old, I know. These two are going to have a rematch just a week later on WCW Saturday Night. I watched that match. It's okay. It's decent for a, you know, free TV match. Mm-hmm. And then they will meet again at, I believe, Starrcade of 93. I did not find that match nearly as good as this one, but, you know, it's another one to check out if you like seeing these two pair off.
Very cool. Yeah, good match. Check it out, folks. Fall Brawl 93, a show that I can honestly say I don't know if I've seen in its entirety since the early 90s on VHS. So
I think that I chose another match from this show from one of our earlier episodes, didn't I? Didn't we do that Flair Rude match?
Did we? Which or did we do the Halloween Havoc one?
Was it the Halloween Havoc one?
I can't remember. I know it sucks. Whichever one we chose.
Yeah, it both sucked. And I chose it because it sucked. Because I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about why it sucked because it's one of those should be good on paper, but to your point, Greg, people just don't have chemistry sometimes or have a style clash. That was an example. But yeah, that might have been from this show. Anyway, that match sucks. This is much better.
Which brings us, I believe, to the following February, correct?
We are going to Super Brawl now, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Boy. Yeah, we are.
Okay. So this... Super Brawl 4. Speaking of the enforcer, Arn Anderson, right? Mm-hmm. This was chosen by you, Jenny.
It was. Shocker, I know.
Yeah, right.
So this is one that I had come across during my Arn Anderson episode research, and it almost made it onto that one, but
surprised.
I felt like I knew we were going to do a Regal episode eventually, so I wanted to kind of save it for that, because I feel like it might be a little bit more of a Regal match than it is an Arn match.
That's very fair, yep.
This is, again, for the TV title, and we have that lovely 30-minute time limit, which I was afraid of. You know, when I initially watched the match, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a fucking draw, and that the fact that it does not end up in a draw is elevates this match quite a bit for me.
And you love ties. You love draws in wrestling, right?
No, no, I don't. I sure don't.
Well, let me tell you this. Draws are better than when the agreed-upon time limit is hit and the lousy, no-authority-having interim president walks out and forces the match to continue, which costs a legend and hero his championship belt against a crybaby little...
You know, he told me to get the fuck out of his ring after that. It was very disrespectful.
A Gorilla Monsoon had no right.
How do we still find a way to make fun of Bitter Bret Hart?
Bret Hart? Every time.
Where he has no, like, he's never had a match with Regal or...
Well,
has he had a match with anyone that in any of these matches we're going to talk about?
Now
and somehow
now
we're
now
still
breaking
gonna find
my heart, Tim, because I think Bret and Regal would have been an awesome match.
I would probably love that match.
I really do think that would have been an awesome match. But they don't even get me started.
Yeah. So Daddy Arn gets a big pop, of course, and comes out in his black, looking like only he can look, you know.
Now I'm going to start ascribing all of Ric Flair's sexual catchphrases about himself to Arn.
I mean, it translates. So.
Oldest rod, longest line.
And, of course, we get our beautiful Michael Buffer intros nailed.
Yeah, how about that, right?
I mean, everything so far is just perfect, right? Arn tries to shake Regal's hand. Regal ain't having none of that.
And by the way, you talked about the 30-minute time limit. We needed a 30-minute time limit just for Buffer's introduction.
Yes.
So.
I suppose so, yeah.
That wasted a good 5 minutes. you know, they start off, Regal not having any of his, you know, sportsmanship, which I loved. And then Regal's left, like upper thigh. They call it
thigh.
The hip. Yeah. Uh-huh. They call it the hip. I'm like, that's not his hip, bro. But anyway, right. It's taped up. And so I'm thinking, like, okay, Arn's going to go after that leg, obviously. But then Arn does not do that for most of the match.
Mm-hmm.
He picks other areas to work on Regal. In the beginning, it's his ear when they're sort of tied up in that neutral hold. Regal starts shaking his head, shaking his ear, seems to have some problems with his ear. Arn jabs him a few times and... So they're really, like, he's really playing it up. It's great. Like, he's wonderful at it. And then a lot of it is, you know, that grappling style. But like we've said, Regal knows how to do that. And Arn does, too.
Mm-hmm.
He is so wonderful in this because you can kind of see him thinking his way through the match. And he never takes it out of any other style than what Regal does. Like, there are a couple of spots that get into the sort of brawly territory, but it's very short-lived, and he hangs with Regal during
yep.
this in such a surprising way for me. This match makes me appreciate Arn even more as a wrestler, just seeing his intelligence against somebody like Regal, who has amazing ring awareness, can work this crowd and things like that. So Bobby and Tony are really good during the commentary as well.
Yes, they are.
They are trying to keep track of the time, which is always difficult and a shit show normally, to the point where Bobby goes over to William to look at his watch and check the time, the official time, which was funny.
And doesn't Sir William at one point, he says something like, it's an English standard time.
Yes. Whatever that means.
Yes. Says that the timepiece is like a family heirloom, and Tony's, that's a Seiko.
That's a Seiko. That was my favorite part of the match, I think. Was Tony calling that out?
Just shitting on him at every opportunity.
It's so good. It's so good. Like, at one point, Arn does, like, take Regal out and tries to fuck up his arm on the post. Works him over there. But very rarely do they get outside the ring. Arn, at one point, does get thrown out or falls out. And then grabs Regal's legs from the floor and then just yanks him out from under him. It's a pretty great spot, and like kind of slams him down on the apron there. But it's quite intimate, you know, yes. Quite an intimate match, and just so much fun to watch.
I will say, and not to interrupt.
No, I interrupt.
Okay. I will say it kind of threatens to lose my interest in that first half. Those first 15 minutes. I won't say they're stalling, but you can tell they're pacing it a little bit slower than they would in a match with, like, you know, a 20-minute time limit. Which, I mean, these World Television title matches, they did not typically get 30 minutes. That was like an accelerated for pay-per-view type of stipulation that they put on this match for whatever reason. I don't think they ever really explain it. They just do. They announce it at the start of the match, and it's like, okay, that's what we're doing. And it sort of tips their hand that they are going to go, if not the distance, then probably close. Just from the way it's paced in that, again, that first half, I think it picks up nicely in the second half. So it's really, you can break this out into two 15-minute segments. And it doesn't quite get to the point of losing me in that first half, but it does get close at times where my attention starts to wander. Mm-hmm. But to your point, the commentary,
right?
And it's just Tony and Bobby, are really doing a great job to hold your interest. Like, that's where things could really fall apart if they sounded disinterested, or if they just, you know, didn't show up for this match. Mm-hmm. But they do a tremendous job of keeping you engaged through some of those slower segments.
And it makes sense because Arn and Regal are, I think Tony has said, two of his favorite wrestlers, if not his two favorite wrestlers. So it makes sense that he would really give his all to sort of keep the interest going in the match. And I agree that at times it threatens to get into dull territory, but I think both guys are skilled enough to bring it out of there when it dips. Particularly like something as simple as, okay, I think an ear injury in a wrestling match is very odd, but yes. Regal was probably one of only maybe two guys that I could see pulling that off in wrestling. Yeah. He makes it believable, and especially when they start cooking towards the end of the match, they really, you know, get things going, wake up the crowd a little bit, and Arn is just such a believable wrestler in general. He does nothing that is hokey, that is see-through, that is, you know, anything that looks choreographed or anything like that. It's just all real. You believe Arn Anderson matches, and Regal, of course, is a master as well. I'll be honest, this is the match that I watched when we first were going to do the show, and I haven't watched it since then. It's been a couple of weeks, but I think I remember the finish wasn't like the smoothest in the world, but I could be misremembering that. Because I'm trying to remember, what was the finish, Jenny?
Well, I actually kind of like it. Towards the end, they have several cool spots, like the body scissors by Arn.
Regal sells a body scissors like nobody else. You talk about selling an ear, but anytime, and I don't know why that's a frequent spot in Regal matches where somebody catches him in a body scissors, but he's just like, ah!
Well, look at them fucking thick thighs on Arn Anderson.
Especially Arn, right?
Jesus. So then he attempts the Boston Crab, and that doesn't really work. Into the sleeper. He tries to get the roll-up, gets two on that. They're kind of barreling towards the last minute. Arn hits a spine buster. Looked all right. A little off balance, but pretty good. Regal goes for the bottom rope, and he's kind of holding on there, and then William comes in and interferes, and then Arn tries the sunset flip, but then Regal stays on his feet. William holds the umbrella over the rope. Regal holds onto it and then drops down to his knees. Bam, one, two, three. Beautifully done.
Yes, like, actually, I'm remembering that now.
It was complicated, but they pulled it off.
I misremembered it, yep.
I was like, what the shit? Like, I was so excited to not have to draw, number right? one. And then the beauty of that, like, you know, I just, it makes me wonder, like, did they work on this match? Like, or is this something that they would call in the ring? I don't know. I feel like that timing, you're probably going to have to work on. But then again, they're so good. Maybe not. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I really like the ending.
You figure they maybe at least worked out the finish to make sure they really had that down. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I mean, I got the sense they probably called it in the ring. Mm-hmm. Other than, like, okay, in those last, you know, 3 minutes, I'll hit the spine buster, right? Mm-hmm. Just as one of those hope spots. Mm-hmm. But I bet you they called everything else on the fly.
Yeah.
I just don't see Arn Anderson being the type to, like, get together with somebody backstage right. with a notebook to go through.
Me spot, either.
You know, just like that's.
But I don't know Regal as far as, you know, his MO as far as that yeah. goes.
Yeah.
If that was.
I don't see him doing it either. I mean, he's such an old school guy that, mm-hmm. and he's so smooth and confident at everything he. Like, it's not like he's ever going to feel lost for something to do out there.
Yeah.
I just cannot imagine that would ever be an issue with them. Well, and in fact, when I think on something that happened a little bit later, not in any of the matches that we chose, but that infamous showing that he has against Bill Goldberg. And, God, what was it, early 98?
Early 98, right? Yep, that's right.
Like, the story coming out of that, and this is an aside, I realize, but mm-hmm. I figured we would end up talking about this one way or another. but the story coming out of that was, oh, Regal shot on Goldberg. Regal tried to get over on Goldberg. He's in tough shit. He's in deep shit now. Yeah, I mean, I believe he's talked about he did get some heat for it, but it wasn't his fault. It was a miscommunication backstage or some kind of breakdown where the agent told them, you're going to work a 6-minute match, basically a competitive match mm-hmm. is what he was told. And Goldberg had not done that up to that point in his run. Like, he was
the hell you say,
the hell you say. Yeah. He was not, I mean, 5 months into that win streak that they were doing, and all of his matches were,
he had only been training at that point for like a year.
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, we're talking about an accelerated process here.
Super green. I mean, he hadn't had a TV match more than like 2 minutes. You know, there was no having a competitive match with Bill Goldberg in January.
Yeah, 1998. Well, and frankly, it didn't even make sense for the trajectory that he was on at that point. Like, no. Bill Goldberg was a rocket ship headed to the top, and Regal at that point in early 98 was in bad shape and was a jobber to the stars, essentially. He was in a very as low a totem pole as you can get and still be a regular on the show at that point. It didn't make any sense for them to have him have a competitive match. So to your point, they send them out there, and then Regal's mm-hmm. got to try to do what he can to stretch Goldberg into a match that he's, and it's not Goldberg's fault by any means. But
no, and it's not Regal's either.
It's just a situation that showed the sort of chaotic situation backstage. At the time.
Exactly, and it's, you could tell, like, Regal is, he's definitely getting over more than anybody else did, but it's not like he's trying to get himself over. He's just trying to walk Goldberg through a 6-minute match. And to have it look, as he was told, competitive. So that was one that got, and he still got heat for it. Like, even though it was not his fault and wasn't Goldberg's fault either, as he said. But it was like, what the, it's just chaos backstage afterwards. Like, what the hell was that? And it's like, I was just doing what my boss told me, you know, whether I was fucking Mike Graham or something else. This was on a Nitro.
It's on a random Nitro in February 98.
I almost picked it, but I watched it back and I was like, it's sort of not as remarkable just watching it as a match, but knowing the story, you got the sort of behind the scenes, which I mean, Regal has talked about extensively. He says he's tired of telling the story, basically.
Right.
But let me see if I can find.
It's a weird match in a lot of ways, because there's some parts of it where it's like, I wonder sometimes about Regal's story, because there is a point in the match when Goldberg hits that rolling leg lock that he was doing a bit, and yeah. Regal does not sell it at all. Because I watched this match maybe a week ago. Like Regal, like, he doesn't even register that it's a hold that's being applied. And maybe that's because Goldberg was applying the hold shittily. But typically you would see guys sell that spot. And then there's the only other part that I thought was like, what are you doing? Is he does kick Goldberg square in the jaw at one point.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
And I was
wake
like,
up, motherfucker.
Yeah, I think that's what he was trying to do. I think that's what he said in the interview is he was trying to, because sometimes guys are like that you'd have to, you know, I've heard that Brock Lesnar's like that, where you have to get a little physical with him for him to really engage in the match.
Right.
And maybe they were trying to get that out of Goldberg. He was trying to get that out of Goldberg, but Bill was just so green, he had no idea what to do at that point. Yeah. And it's the other thing is, like, it's maybe you'll disagree with me, Tim. It's not a bad match. It's not a good match by any means, but it's not that bad.
No, like, it's not that bad.
It's not like this all time horrific match that maybe the reputation would build up for it. I didn't think that Goldberg came out of this match looking like shit. He was fine. Yeah. He came back and demolished Jerry Flynn another 50 times, and he was good.
Exactly. And Glacier.
Glacier. My God. Glacier just never gave up, did he?
Yeah. But I mean, what are you supposed to do? Like, if Goldberg was truly lost out there as to what to do next, like, he's not even on offense, of course Regal's going to take it. I mean, this is, we know Regal works pretty snug anyway. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he might give him a love tap here and there just to get some fire out of the guy who's quite green. So I'm looking now. I see this was apparently on the February 9th, 1998 Nitro. So do check that out, Jenny, if you're inclined. But yeah, that, like, I think people remember this as, oh, this is why, you know, Regal got fired from WCW because of this match. It's like, no, he got fired many months later because of, you know, the demons, as they say, as I know you're fond of, Jenny.
I am.
But, you know, got himself cleaned up, had that little man's man stint in the WWF for a month or whatever. How long was he actually there? Do you remember, Greg?
Less than a month, I think. I think he was there for maybe 3 weeks, and then he was like out of. I, that's how I remembered anyway. Mm-hmm. It's such a small, insignificant portion of time, and yet it was so memorable. I will never forget it, because I'm 15 years old at this time, and already have a very odd sense of humor. And I remember the first video they played, and I was like, is that Lord Steven Regal? And he's playing this character, the man's man, where he's a lumberjack for no apparent reason. And he grabs an orange, and he squeezes the orange into a glass. And it's like, he's supposed to be a real man's man. I guess that's something a real man would do, is squeeze an orange into a glass and then discard the pulp next to it. And it's like, it was so awesome. It was hilarious. And I remember, like, coming to school the next day, I was like, everybody was talking about whatever Austin did or whatever. I was like, forget that. Did you see Steven Regal as a lumberjack? How great was that? And of course, it didn't last. But
I can see him as a lumberjack, though.
You know what it reminds me?
And he had the best theme song of all time.
Yes, yeah, that theme song was so extra. It makes me think of, like, I know you guys get these YouTube ads, much like me, with the Dr. Squatch or whatever, the hipster manly beard soap ads that are like so aggro but trying to be ironic at the same time, and it's just stupid. Which, like, it's super played out today, but it felt like an early version of that, or like an early version of Chuck Norris jokes, you know?
Yeah.
Where it was completely absurd.
You're exactly right. It was so ironic and absurd and, like, perfect, but it was so also way ahead of its time.
Too far ahead of its time.
I will give him credit for all the shit that we will give him in later episodes, I'm sure. I will give him credit. I believe 100% that was Russo.
I do too.
I think that was a 100% Russo idea, and I think it was a good Russo idea.
Feels like a Russo special. Yeah.
Well, I like me some Russo.
So. He probably was on the payroll for, you know, longer than we saw him on television, certainly. But, I mean, people
Here's
forget.
What we're going to do. We're going to take Regal. We're going to take him out of his royalty gimmick. Nobody cares about foreigners, bro. What yeah. we're going to do is we're going to make him be a lumberjack, and he's going to squeeze an orange into a glass. But it's ironic, see, because nobody actually does that.
Right. It's so it's going to be bro. Hot. It's going to get over. He found his way back to WCW, though. I think people yeah. forget. Like, he was back there by, you know, 99 doing the weird, like, the other triad, right, with Fit Finlay and Dave Taylor. Yeah, he found his way back eventually. All that is to say, this Arn Anderson match in 1994 was pretty good stuff.
I'm glad y'all enjoyed it.
Jenny, though, did you notice, like, by the end of that match, they are pouring sweat.
Oh, yeah. Honey, you I know mean, I noticed that.
They were drenched. You could tell. I mean, these men were putting in work.
Yes, they were.
Made me think of what Arn Anderson often said, how he would lather up with the cologne backstage before his matches. Dudes would give him shit for that. You know, Arn, what are you doing, man? You're like, it's not for me. You got to take care of your man if you want him to take care of you out there.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love Arn's caretaker.
Something Big Leon never learned.
Right?
Allegedly.
You just got gloved by Vader. So anyway.
I had to pull Leon aside, and I had to say, listen, just wash your shit. And how pathetic is that, by the way, that I had to pull a grown man aside, and I had to tell him to wash his shit because one of his peers complained that he stunk too bad.
I just turned around backwards.
Oh God! Anyway, the other thing I wanted to say about this match is, Lord Steven Regal, I think at this point had fully found himself. Like, this is around the time when he was really, this character had fully rounded into what it would be. He knew who he was 100%. Sir William knew his role, played a little bit less of a role than he did early on, I think. And Regal is just. He's a commanding presence and would continue to round out his character, but he was so good already as Lord Steven Regal that he was sort of must-see television.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. And I've got the match on in the background. I'm seeing Regal apply. We talked about that very cool butterfly suplex. Mm-hmm. I think we get like an early version of the Regal stretch here in this match, before that had really kind of taken off as his signature submission maneuver. Like, all kinds of just cool little touches like that. Mm-hmm. And, man, I wonder what cologne Arn was wearing. What do you think?
I was going to ask that. What cologne was he using?
What do you think Arn Anderson uses? Does he mix it up? Does he figure he's got to have a standard, right?
It's got to be, Brute?
Brute.
I was about to say Brute. But maybe with like a pinch of like whiskey thrown in, just for the old horseman effect.
Well, he's probably he's still sweating out the whiskey, so he might not
just
have to.
Helps out.
Or I guess maybe with Arn it was beer mainly. Yeah. If you believe that Nash's impersonation of him
with the cooler. Yep. Yep.
Significance of that. That's the hand I used to open beer with. but yes, great match again. Regal is the man.
I don't know. I think we should acknowledge this is kind of a polarizing match.
I think so, yeah.
There are people that really hate it.
Yes.
And I get it. Yeah, I get why. I get why you would hate this
match. I'm one of them sometimes.
Yeah, I go back and forth on it too. Cause I didn't love this whole match. I thought, but even still, I appreciated it in the end because of the quality of the wrestlers. But it's not like, it's not one of my favorites from either of them. But it's still, I mean, I know people, I've seen the complaints, it is a long match, and I get why people would lose interest in it at certain points, but at the same time, to me, these are two wrestlers that are so interesting to watch that it works, and you can see how hard they're working by, you pointed out, Tim, they're drenched in sweat. You can't accuse either one of them of being lazy in this match or of not working hard, which is always always a great criticism of people, but it's like,
yeah, right.
They're not, they're clearly working their asses off here. They're just doing it in a different style than maybe and, we're used to seeing. So
for me, like, people will ask me, Jenny, have you seen this match? Have you seen this show? And my answer is usually impossible question to answer because I have a hard time at some points retaining, you know, what match I've seen, what show I've seen.
How do you remember? Yeah, specific matches. Specific
this has always stuck out to me. Like, I remember watching this match. I remember loving it so much. And for me, that's a big deal, right? And then also, I caught it in a point in my sort of like wrestling learning period that right when I needed to, right? Because it's a serious, intimate match. And
yes,
I wanted to appreciate something like that. And so I sort of felt like it was a turning point sort of for me in my learning process.
Yeah. Well, and I think what you'll find is in your own definition of great matches, at least this is how I look at it, having watched wrestling for so many freaking years, the match, when I can remember specific matches that I've seen from that I may not have seen in 20 years, that means that to me it was a great match more often than not, or a really awful match for the other reason.
Sure.
That match that you remember because of how bad it was. But it means that they did something right in that, usually. Now, sometimes you'll go back and watch a match that you used to like, and you're like, eh, it doesn't really do it for me anymore. And that's sad. But most of the time, that's what makes the great ones stand out, is you remember that match as if you were just watching it yesterday. So for you, this is a great match, and there's nothing that's what that means pretty much. Like it's a standout.
I think my issue, if I'm watching Super Brawl 4 as a pay-per-view and I want to just sit down and watch that pay-per-view, right? I would get to this match and I would skip it 9 out of 10 times. Not because it's not good, not because I don't like it, but I would just be like, I want to watch this pay-per-view. Oh, wow. There's this 30-minute match here, like right in the middle of the show. And it just
And having not watched this pay-per-view in some time, but seeing some of the stuff around this match, it looks like just an atrocious pay-per-view. And it may not be, but by God, what a horrible card.
You know, it's not bad, actually.
I knew you were going to say that.
It's got that Johnny B. Bad, Jimmy Garvin match where the stunner debuts.
Yes. Which I actually watched that match because I was so curious about why the hell is Jimmy Jam Garvin in 1994? I don't remember this happening.
Yeah.
So I had to watch that, and it's actually not a bad match. It's okay. And the stunner does debut right there.
It's insane. It, like, he's a retired airline pilot and busts out the stunner at the end of the match. Yeah. But anyway, you know, if I'm going to watch this pay-per-view, I would get to this match and be like, maybe some other time, you know?
Yeah, you have to be in the mood for this sort of
thing. That's a great way of putting it. It's one of those matches you just have to be in the right frame of mind for, because it's not one that I'm going to go back and watch over and over again. If I get in the mood for sort of a lengthy, technical sort of Arn Anderson match, because that's a little bit different than a lot of what he did in his in his career, I might want to throw this on, because there's not a lot of 30-minute singles Arn Anderson matches.
No.
So it's something of a curiosity for that reason. But yeah, I agree.
In isolation, I have and would watch it over and over. Sometimes, as you said, you're just in the mood. Is that a vacuum? All day long, sure. If there's any, like, criticism, I guess I would have, it's not even so much the length. A lot of people look at it and go, there's no reason this has to be a 30-minute match. And
well, that's true, but you can have
there's no reason any match
30-minute match. Yeah. Right, exactly. There's no reason it has to be 5 or 10 minutes. Yeah.
It's not really a valid. It's just, it depends on what you do in that time you're given, right? But if there's any, it's more, I sort of look at the psychology, and you alluded to it, Jenny, where Regal's left thigh is taped, and Arn just does not target it at all until he does. And it's just, and I get it, like, the Arn Anderson thing is to work the left arm. That's just his go-to. It's what he's always done. So you get the impression he came into this match with a game plan and just wanted to stick to his game plan. I think they try to cover for it on commentary by stating that, well, we didn't hear anything about a Regal leg injury here. Maybe he's just trying to sucker Arn in. He's just got it taped, you know, because he doesn't want Arn to work another limb that actually is more
is vulnerable. Injured, right? Which is great and awesome. That was great commentary too, because that's something that Bobby Heenan used to say a lot on commentary. Is if it were me, I would tape up the other leg so that they go after the one that's still good and not go after the one that's actually injured. So in that case, yeah, I think that's pretty cool and a good job by commentary.
It turns it into Arn being smart and not falling into the trap. So if that was the idea, then cool, but it's awfully subtle the way that they maybe make that point.
I think that was a case of the announcer, the rare case in wrestling of the announcers covering for the wrestlers in a way that,
I think so too,
that picks up for a flaw in the game plan. But I also think that the other criticism I would have of the match, which again I liked, in those middle portions where the crowd just kind of dies at times, and it feels like in those long matches you have to sort of have peaks and valleys, and it feels like this is sort of like not flat in terms of the match sucks, but it's just kind of like they're at the same kind of neutral level of control for most of the match. There's not really, you know, a big sequence in the middle where they run the ropes and or they crisscross and shoulder blocks or hip tosses or whatever to sort of get the crowd, you know, back into it. They sort of are content to mat wrestle up until they get into that finishing stretch when they get down to that final 5 to 10 minutes and they're really kicking into high gear. But two good wrestlers that
with
have unique personalities.
With this being 30 minutes, I could kind of weather that. I'll tell you where that really just sinks a match for me is the here we go again, making fun of Bret Hart.
Oh,
the Bret Shawn Iron Man match is nothing but neutral, stalemate type stuff for, I swear to God, 55 minutes, right? There is nothing happening in that match for, it's no exaggeration to say, like, the overwhelming majority. I tried to rewatch that match earlier this year, like, a couple of times. It was killing me. Like, I was like,
I still love the match. I love it, even with its flaws. Yep. I don't know. It's a debate to be had another time. But I understand the complaint. I knew the match you're going to go to on that, because that is the overwhelming thought. You
see, I always thought I was an apologist for that match until I tried to rewatch it.
Yeah, and I dig it, but I can see the reason why people wouldn't. It's hard to work the sort of predetermined time limit amount of time. But I thought they did a good job. But that's another debate for another time. But yes, there have to be peaks and valleys. I do agree with that, and I think you have to have some sort of, you can lull people down for a little while, and then you have to have some sort of like brief action to sort of get them back into it, so you can get back into your mat stuff and go from there. But I think in general Regal was really good about that most of the time, but sometimes he would have sort of just stalemate grappling matches that could
sometimes. I think some of that was more on the opponent than on him.
Right. Right.
But I mean, here we get another. He won the World Stevie Championship in the first match we looked at. See a successful title defense here. And as Jenny said, I was so glad we actually got a decisive pinfall, because they're setting you up for that 30-minute draw.
Yes, in the which classic. Case,
in which case, he still would have retained, but they actually did give him the win. So just really appreciate that. Appreciated seeing
so
that.
Much.
Yeah, and WCW was never shy about the TV time limit draw. Like they did that a lot in those days. So glad that we didn't get that here.
Yeah.
And talking about sort of veteran wrestlers working a different style and childhood nostalgia, brings me to my match, which I think we're going to take a break first, but the match that I selected we'll talk about in just a minute. I have quite not quite the story, but I have a small story to tell about that match.
Okay, I like the tease. I like the setup. Me too.
Speaking of that break, I want you to break right now. Check out the new merch store, which is amazing because there are amazing shirts like Talkin' WCW at tpublic.com. So if you have a favorite PTBN show, which of course you do, and of course it's this one, you need to go there and you need to order a t-shirt. You can do that by going to tpublic.com and then just type in PTBW in the search, and that will get you like mugs, t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, and all kinds of fun things, and check that out. Then you can listen to our fantastic shows that we have going right now. A lot of the GWCW ballot reveals are going to start popping up. Our good friend Jacob Williams has started a reveal podcast with Tyler Kelly, so they're going to do theirs in 10 parts, I do believe. They already have an episode out. They're discussing numbers 100 through 91. So check that out. See how it compares to your own list. Dave Thackera and Neil Trauma have a new show, episode 2 of Chronology. I don't know.
Chronology.
Okay. A show by show walkthrough of Raw. And they discuss Ric Flair, Rob Bartlett, Terry Taylor, and more on that second episode. Marty is back for Pro Wrestling Love number 12 with his friend Matt for part 2 of their top shoot style matches of all time. And then on episode number 9 of Wrestling's Chicken Salad, Ben Locke and his guests break down No Way Out 2003, including Triple H versus Steiner.
Oh boy.
Yeah. On this
they make chicken salad out of that, man.
They do. On this week's NWA Saturday Special, Scott and the Doctor discuss the possibility of an NWA WWE Starrcade mega show, then continue their GWCW ballot countdown with matches number 50 through 41. If you want to give us some feedback on those shows and all the other shows, you can review us on all your podcast apps. Apple Podcasts, I think, is a really good one to leave a review on. Spotify, Amazon, you can find us there. Also, we have a couple of sister feeds that go along with the Place to Be Nation. One of them is the PTB Pop Experience. Awesome shows over there. I was a guest on Piece of the Action recently. Matt and I watched Lethal Weapon, and that was a blast. I love that movie, and it's definitely a Christmas movie, obviously. There's a fun trivia show I was on over there, too, in which I bombed, but don't listen to that one. Never mind. Of course, the North-South Connection is another podcast feed with JT, Aaron, and Chad Campbell. They have a bunch of great shows over there as well. I will talk about a few of my shows over there when we wrap up. We have a pretty cool Facebook page as well, the Place to Be discussion group on Facebook. Just send us an invite, we'll add you, and then bug you all day with nonsense, like we always do. Our 2021 stretch project is determining the greatest NWA WCW wrestler of all time. What?
Continuing, yeah, the WCW stretch projects, huh?
I like it, and I feel like our show would be a great resource for that research.
Well, yes. I think it contributed mightily to the GWCW research, and I want to say that the three matches we're talking about here on this episode maybe got some love in GWCW as these lists are being revealed. So, yeah.
Well, did you ever turn your list in there, Tim? You still working?
You know what? I think at this point, it's a real I choose me moment.
You would.
You know, in my life where I know it's not going to amount to anything because, I mean, let's face it, the lists are already, the ballots have been counted, folks.
They have.
This is the bottom line. I don't know how everything is going to shake down, but I am aware that the ballots have all been counted. I think I'm going to send a ballot anyway. just
I think you knowing, should do it for the comedy.
Just knowing that, it, yeah, just knowing it won't be counted. Yes. I'm gonna go ahead and send one in because I have I had something in the neighborhood of like 10 matches I wanted to rewatch, and just literally there has not been time because this year has, as we were talking about during break, just been such a shit show. It really end of last year, end of this year. And it was just, I just felt like that GWCW ballot was one of the casualties of the year that was 2020, sadly. But I'm not giving up on it. I may not get my voice heard, but I will get my ballot in. How about that?
There we go. I'll read your ballot.
Excellent.
Well, I did not submit a ballot or build one. However, I reserve the right to burn things to the ground when Eddie and Ray isn't the number one voted match.
You know what? I'll tell you what, Greg. I've got it because I pretty much got like my top 90, you know, more or less sorted at this point. And I went very high on that match. To the tune of, let me pull it up. That is my number five match of all time. WCW.
You know, I'll take it. It would be my number one, but I would take it at five.
I remember you saying that it was your number one. So.
I think it might be my, well, I'll, excluding Bret Hart matches, I think it might be my favorite wrestling match.
Wow. Okay.
It doesn't involve
I'll knock Batman. You for it.
Oh, that not, and not. That and Rockin' Austin at WrestleMania 17.
Okay.
Maybe the two for me, I think.
Good stuff in here, though, man.
Oh, yeah. Also, I'm hoping a Blitzkrieg match makes the list.
Well, I didn't make a ballot, so.
It's not too late.
Yeah, no, there's still time. You can find lists. List reveals on PlaceToBeNation.com along with a bunch of cool articles and all kinds of topics like Trent's SmackDown on Fox, This Week in the WWE, Polly's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and Matt's Disney Live Action Journey. Always help us out on Amazon by clicking on the banner on that Placement Nation homepage, or you can just do placementnation.com backslash, I always say backslash Amazon.
Beautiful backsplash there.
Backsplash right onto Amazon. I fucked up and got an Amazon credit card, y'all.
Oh, did you?
It's not working out well for me.
Oh, I've had one for so long. I mean, you get them points, you know? You just...
Yeah. You want to buy the points, basically. You're just like buying points. But anyway, it's very useful. But
oh, yeah. I hit that. That has my lowest actual credit limit, and it's the card I use the most by far.
Well, it's Amazon. So, I mean, like... Yeah.
I don't know how they have enough of it yet.
How can you even put a price on that, really? Yeah. Like, Amazon is invaluable to me, so I'm just like, here, just take all my money. It's fine. Anyway, moving on to our final match. Greg, this was your choice. What did you go with?
Yes. So, this match is one that was special to me. I knew when we were talking about Regal that this was going to be the match I was going to go with. Because, so, this is a match coming to us from, and I'm horrible with the Clash numbers. The Clash in June of 1994.
27,
thank you. The Clash 27, and it is Lord Steven Regal challenging for the world television title against the most unlikely of champions at this point in time, the living legend, or at that time, just the legend, Larry Zbysko. Now,
living man?
Not yet. He had not yet earned the moniker Living.
Living.
Which apparently was a huge deal.
Still half dead.
he looked it in most of his matches. But not in this run, though. This story is not nearly as interesting as I hyped it up to be, but let's take you back to 1994, a young, strapping young lad at 10 years old, Greg Phillips just making his way in the world, trying to survive in the mean streets of his grandparents' living room. Wow. And And turning to pro wrestling to help him pass the summer, waiting to go back to Florida and go to school. And my cousins were just getting into wrestling around this time. They were younger than me. And we would gather and watch the professional wrestling on the television there. And a guy that I never got the appeal of ever in my life was Larry Zbysko as a wrestler.
Same!
I never understood it. When he was in the... I liked the Enforcers with him and Arn Anderson, but that was an Arn Anderson tag team, and he was in nothing but good tag team. So I was like, you know, Larry was definitely the least threatening part of that tag team. In the Dangerous Alliance, I thought he was clearly the weak link of the Dangerous Alliance. When I'm an 8-year-old kid, you know, he was the weak link of the Dangerous Alliance. Then he became a commentator, and I actually kind of liked him as a commentator as a kid. He was fine, hit the pole and all that. And
I hit the pole.
And I don't know why I make him sound like Barney Gumble, but that's become my Larry Zbysko impression.
Hey, Homer! Oh, I hit the pole.
Around 94, they started this really cool angle back when it was very rare to have an announcer get pulled out of the booth and wrestle anybody. Like, this was not common, but Larry was an announcer by 94, and they started this angle where Regal would like insult him. And he would insult Regal on commentary, and Regal would come back and talk shit to him at commentary. And so I was thinking it would go the same way that it went in the 80s when Jesse would threaten to come out and wrestle Hogan. It never happened and stuff like that. But instead, to my shock, Larry Zbysko pops Regal on the set of the one of the shows, Saturday Night, I guess. And Larry Zbysko comes out of retirement to challenge for the World Television title, and he wins it. He beats Regal for the television title, and for whatever reason, and I can't for the life of me explain it, I became a freaking Larry Zbysko mark. I wanted him to win that championship, and I was a Regal fan, but I bought into Larry Zbysko's coming out of retirement. I was like, it was such a good feel, it was like a feel-good story, and I was like, it's sort of like an inverted version of what would happen with Bob Backlund, where he was the crazy old man that was winning the championship later that year.
Okay, yeah.
But in this case, it was the traditional just jerk weasel heel who for once in his life gets to be a babyface, and he's coming out of retirement to put Regal in his place a little bit. And I knew I liked Regal's style of wrestling because as a kid, I always loved the mat wrestlers. That was my favorite. Technical wrestling was my favorite to watch, oddly enough, for a kid. And so I wanted to see what Zbysko could do with Regal. And I thought they had a really good match, and Regal – or Zbysko, Larry Z wins the championship, and that leads us into the clash where Regal gets his rematch to try to regain his World Television Championship against the legend. And there is so much to talk about this match. I remember this match, watching it. I was at my uncle's place babysitting my cousins. He has a 10-year-old babysitting younger kids. And we were watching this match.
This is
I still remember watching this match all these years later and just jumping off our couch in excitement during this match. And I was thought to myself the whole time I was getting ready to research for this episode, I was like, please don't let me watch this match that I remember so fondly from my youth and it sucks. Please don't let that happen. Please don't let me watch it and be like, God, it's the same boring Larry Zbysko match that he had in the 80s and every other point in his career.
Valid fears, Greg. Yeah.
But I watched it, and I don't know if you guys will agree. I freaking love this match. I love it. I love this match. If this match would accept my proposal, I would propose to this match and marry it. Because they managed to, again, at age 30, whatever I am, 6 or 7, I don't even remember anymore, invest in goddamn Larry Zbysko.
Yeah, it's a dandy.
It is. It's really fun. And probably my favorite Larry Z match, if we're being honest.
I'm like, this is a masterpiece of a little 10 to 15 minute masterpiece of a match. And there's so much to talk about. I want to take us to the very beginning of this freaking match. Because one thing we haven't talked about at all in this episode, Steven Regal had one of the 5 or 6 greatest WCW theme songs, in my opinion. Mm. That song is perfect. Way better than that crap they gave him in the WWE. They should have paid all the money to buy the rights to that song, and that should have always been his theme song. It's perfect. They should have never changed it. Even WCW changed it at one point to some stupid-sounding generic British song. This was the one. This set the tone for everything that was the Steven Regal character. Pompous, arrogant, and royal, dignified. Yes. And just a tremendous song that fit the character so perfectly. He comes to the ring dressed like a red coat soldier from the Revolutionary War with a powdered wig.
Yes.
Complete with Jesse the Body Ventura telling us about, well, you know who that's supposed to be, Tony. This is where you're supposed to ask me who that is. Who is it, Jesse? That's not supposed to be George Washington. That's his great, great, great uncle, Lord Rupert Regal. Mm-hmm. Ask me who that was, Tony. Who was that? Lord Rupert Regal was the guy that was on the other side of the Potomac when George Washington threw the silver dollar and he picked it up and spent it. Which is notable for a couple of reasons. A, it's funny as hell. And B, I don't know what the fuck he's talking about.
I was going to ask you guys.
I've never in my life heard anything about George Washington throwing a silver dollar across the Potomac. What is
Jesse
this?
Is fucked up, y'all.
Get me out of here.
He's making up shit.
But it was tremendous. The whole thing was true. Tony is just completely aghast at this whole thing.
Yes.
It's tremendous. And by the way, this was the last show that Jesse did for WCW. Last clash.
Oh.
He did for WCW. And he would be fired shortly thereafter, I believe. So,
and this, by the way, is taking place in North Charleston, South Carolina, in the North Charleston Coliseum.
Yeah, but they're American pissants. They don't matter.
Right.
Regal. All that matters is
this complete nonsense. Steven Regal coming out, and that's another thing I love about Regal's. He's not afraid to make a complete fool of himself. Like, he's not afraid to look foolish for the sake of the character. And
he gets wrestling.
He gets it.
He gets it. He understands it so well. When you're the heel, you got to be willing to make an ass of yourself. You have to. Unless you're built like Vader, you have to be willing to make an ass of yourself.
You have to show
and
ass.
He gets that. And he's so good at it. And he comes out. He looks, even as a Steven Regal fan, he looks so pompous and ridiculous that you want somebody to knock the wig off of his head.
Absolutely absurd.
Then, to what do my wandering ears should appear? But this absolutely bizarre legend theme song for Larry Zbyszko that I didn't remember at all, to the point where right before this show, I went to YouTube because I was convinced this was an overdub. Mm. I was like, WCW wouldn't have given anybody, that's not even a song. Like, nothing happens in this song. It's just a weird, like, I don't know, trumpet sound or something. And I looked it up. God, it was his theme song at the time. So
what are we doing?
Here comes Larry Z, and he's got his belt, and he actually looks cool for once. Kind of cool for Larry Z. And he's
cool
talking. And to his credit, he's talking on the way to the ring. And I thought, oh, is he actually saying, like, insider stuff? No, he's in character. He's talking about how ridiculous Regal looks, that he looks like George Washington and stuff like that. As he's walking to the ring, get the introductions. Sir William is there. They're stalling out, which is a great Larry Z tactic, right? The traditional Larry Zbyszko stall, and Regal uses it on him. Love that touch.
Yep.
And then the bell rings, and damn if these two don't go to war with each other. And Regal is coming out throwing bombs. I'm talking palm strikes to the head, European uppercuts, those great European uppercuts he threw. Larry's getting a little worked over, and then there's this spot pretty early in the match where Regal is just pounding on Larry and knocking him back into the corner, and he's just teeing off on him, and Larry starts to almost kind of hulk up a little bit, and Regal hits him with uppercuts, and then Regal finally Zbyszko waits and he waits and he waits, and finally Larry fires up, and when he fires up, it's one of the best things I've seen in wrestling in some time, because he fires up and just hits these two great punches to the gut, to the head, and one of the best spinning kicks I've ever seen in wrestling. I mean,
great karate strike.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I watch a lot of UFC, and that was as good a spinning kick as you'll see in the UFC. Mm-hmm. And knocks Regal on his ass. And Larry fights back. There's a body scissors spot, which we were just talking about in the Arn match. There's counter wrestling here where Regal gets, at times even out wrestled by Larry. Regal still manages to keep the advantage a lot of this match, but Larry makes his comebacks, times them so perfectly. At one point, Larry hits this sick pile driver.
Oh yeah,
and I great near fall to the point where when I first watched this back, I was like, wait, did Larry win this match? And Regal wins it back on Saturday night or something. But the crowd is into Larry. This is really, if you think about it, where the crowd, I think where the crowd support for Larry that would carry on through his Nitro announcing tenure began. The crowd really buying into him as this legendary figure, because he didn't really have that great a history in WCW, but the fans were buying him as this sort of legendary wrestler that Regal had disrespected. And Regal, to me, is at his absolute best here. His facial expressions, you know, the disdain in his face as he's doing, and just these little things, little palm strikes to the side of the head, even little stuff that was done just to be annoying. At one point, my favorite spot in the match is Larry's on offense, and he does the Eddie. Well, I don't even know if it's the Eddie Guerrero, but it's the sort of jump up and scrape both your boots across the guy's eyes when they're on the ground. And Regal
kind of does it too sometimes. Yeah,
Regal turns over and slaps the mat and stands up like he's a baby face and puts his and then holds up that underhanded British boxing stance. Like he's gonna get into a fist fight, and there's
well, we pissed him off bad.
Exactly. I was thinking when I watched this, I was like, "Did Rio get legit pissed there?" But I don't think he did. I think he's just that damn good a performer. And him and Larry have this intense stare down to the point where the referee's trying to come between them, and Larry's telling the referee to get out of the way, and Regal kind of backs Larry down. It's just so good, and it was unexpected. There's a butterfly suplex attempt by Regal that's reversed by Larry into a pinning situation with a bridge. Really good near fall. And then, of course, the finish comes with Sir William getting involved and blocking a Boston Crab attempt. And Regal gets the pinfall and gets his championship back and immediately starts talking trash to the front row after he wins his championship back by cheating, of course. Larry stays strong. Regal gets his belt back. To me, this is just great pro wrestling from both guys. I got to give Larry credit. He is outstanding in this match. I know I've talked a lot about this. I was just so excited that this match was as good as I remembered it being when I was a kid, because this is really probably one of the matches that made me a huge Regal fan, because even as a kid, I recognized how good of a wrestler he was, like his counters and his technical wrestling skills and things of that nature, and those European uppercuts, which I loved. Really, really good stuff here. I'll lay out now, let you guys talk about what you thought about the match, because I feel like I'm probably over praising it, but I just love this match so freaking much.
No, I'm with you. The crowd was like full of little young Gregs, I guess. Like, I was shocked at the love that Larry Z got when he came out. That took me aback a little bit. But yeah, I mean, everything was so fucking like stiff, like a fucking war. And Larry, like, was surprising to me in this. He had a little belly, you know, he's not a body guy. Okay.
My belly's just a little big. My hand is just a little big.
But, you know, but even with Regal, you know, being somewhat sort of taller and stronger than him, he really does hang in there with him. And I don't think that he can help himself with sort of those a little bit heelish moves, like the boot thing that you talked about. Like, you know, like, probably shouldn't be doing shit like that. But I just feel like that's, again,
raised his eyes at one point, too.
Yeah, he does those sort of little details again. That sort of matches what Regal does in the match. Again, I thought the ending was so good, because it's like William helps flip Regal up after the pin attempt, and then Regal just grabs onto the rope. Like, his ring awareness is like, just hold onto this rope, and then gets the win. Like, amazing, amazing finish again. And I really don't mind all of the interference at all of the end of the matches. Normally I would get irritated by that, but for some reason, all of this just really works for me.
I was just thinking the same thing, in that I feel like I'm just now realizing that in each of these three matches we've looked at, mm-hmm. Regal has won thanks to interference by Sir William. And that really, I mean, that really should bother me. It should bother all of us, but they do it in such different and creative ways that I just kind of mark out for it.
Me too. Me too.
And I just like it. I like to see a guy just be this dominant. I don't know that we've covered a wrestler and had, you know, three just straight up. Yeah. I mean, manager assisted, but three mm-hmm. pretty decisive wins. Like he's
yeah,
winning.
Yeah, we usually pick losers, don't we?
Yeah, or at least a mix where they win some, they lose one. And here,
I never won a match. I wrestled 20 years, never won a match.
So yeah, I realized that, but at the same time, it's more of a feature than a bug, I think, in this case.
I agree.
Agreed. I think that interference is fine in wrestling when it's done right and when it's mm-hmm. when it's done to serve the purpose of building a villain, which can then upload, which can then uplift other baby faces along the way.
it doesn't feel like it shortchanges the match. It's not at all. This was going to be a classic, and then it got its.
Yep.
Its
mm-hmm. That's what gets frustrating.
Out from slicks.
Right.
What gets frustrating is when you're watching this classic athletic contest between two guys. A lot of times the heel isn't really wrestling like a heel. It's just two great wrestlers having a great wrestling match. And then interference comes and either causes a DQ, which is horrible, or just, you know, ruins an otherwise outstanding match. If it's done and it puts heat on the guy, I'm okay with it. And in this case, I thought all three of these finishes put heat on Regal and protected his opponent in the best way. And they didn't use the time limit stipulation, which I like too. Because I like time limit draws on occasion, but very rare occasions.
It felt like these were building to a finish anyway, and it's just that's how it ended with Sir William getting involved, just to punctuate what was going to happen anyway, sort of, just being that ace in the hole. So I think that's the difference maker. I'm sorry, Jenny, what did you start saying?
No, I was just, I think it's Tony that, or it might be Jesse, mentions that Larry is a black belt. Have we talked about this before?
Yeah, that's one of those things where I'm never sure whether it's kayfabe.
Same.
Yeah.
That was a part of all of Larry's like babyface matches. They would always talk about how he had like a black belt in judo or something mm-hmm. or some sort of martial art. And I was also never confident that it was true. It wouldn't be judo in this case, but like I was never confident it was true until I saw that spinning back kick.
Yeah, right.
Like, that's not a pro wrestling thing that's taught. Like that was legit technique. I think maybe it might be true.
All right. We'll call it
possibly. Well, I don't know.
But to the point earlier, I mean, it's a Larry Zbyszko match, which not only is it a Larry Zbyszko match, it's post retirement, you know, we're in 1994 and against someone who, as we have emphasized, there's always that risk of there being that styles clash. So it just feels like there's a lot working against this match and it somehow manages to succeed in spite of itself. Like, God, on paper, Steven Regal versus Larry Zbyszko, those sound like they should be doo-doo shit. Like some of the worst matches you could ever subject yourself to, right? And they have this trilogy of matches.
And all of them are good.
1994, and they're all really good.
Oh, yeah? Like,
yeah, yep. There's this. There was at Slamboree back
Slamboree,
in
May. Yeah, that's when Zbyszko wins the title, and then I think they have
they had a Saturday night one.
Saturday night match. Yep.
I think that's where the title switch happens actually, because they do a thing where it's like the main event, and they run out of time, and you're like, "Are you kidding me?" but then they do a replay like the following week where you actually get the finish. And I want to say so it's like they didn't actually show the title, the actual title switch from the finish until the following week. It was something kind of screwy like that.
WCW.
And I may be wrong, but it doesn't matter.
Sounds right. That sounds right. That sounds familiar to me. I haven't seen any of these matches since 1994. So
that's
but it sounds familiar.
Yeah, and that's the longest of the three matches that they had. I don't know if I like it the best, necessarily. It's also a little bit hard to find. It's not on the network. Because it's a 94 Saturday night match, so... Anyway.
If we have any WWE Network aficionados that are listening to our podcast, please please get on them about uploading some of these Saturday night shows that we're missing.
I mean, yeah, I could probably live without... I mean, I can't live without Worldwide, but certainly let's put Saturday night ahead of that. Like, let's like make a little more progress here. Because you're missing out on some great classics there.
If they had it, I might have selected the Duchess of Queensbury match or whatever the hell it was with Regal.
The Marquis of Queensbury.
I was fascinated by this match because, again, one that I remember being really good when I was a kid, but. I have no idea if it holds up, but
so help me out with the gimmick for that. Didn't they spread it out over a couple of weeks? It was like it was Regal and Flair is what you're talking about, mm-hmm. right?
My recollection of it is that way that they had it over a course of weeks, but I also remember it being sort of like a round system, like the British wrestling round system.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember the specifics of it because it's been so long. I just remember I liked
like
it.
Five-minute rounds, or it was like 5 10-minute rounds, something like that, spread out over a series of weeks, I want to say on Worldwide or one of those. Mm-hmm. I don't even think it was on Saturday night. But it's one of those, again, kind of hard to track down for these reasons. But yeah, I mean, I'm sort of a sucker for the old gunfighter coming out of retirement thing that they do with Zbyszko here, even though it is, again, Larry Zbyszko. I'm not trying to trash the guy. It's just, it's surprising. Like, even in the Dangerous Alliance days, he was kind of the butt monkey of the group, right? The point is that he blew it and just couldn't cut it and got kicked out. Yeah, and then he kind of just goes into retirement quietly. And now we see him staging this big comeback. So you're really conditioned for this is not going to be good. Like, this is, I don't know why they're doing this, but there's no way it could be good. And it's like shockingly, shockingly good.
And something that I just realized, it was also, I think I mentioned that it was the first time that I'd seen an announcer come out of the booth to have a match other than like, you know, mm-hmm. fill-in announcers like Randy Savage or Roddy Piper on the WWF, where they would have matches after being in the booth. But this was different. This was like a guy that was fully into retirement. And to me, like, it was cool because so many times you would hear the heel commentators or whatever, and they would talk up their accomplishments, or even the face commentators, and they would talk up, you know, Gorilla talking about what he would do differently than the guy in the ring and how he would apply a hold better. And I, you know, as a fan, I always took it as like BS. Like, you know, they're just talking shit. They wouldn't they wouldn't actually do that in the ring. So to see Larry come out of the booth and actually do all the stuff that he would talk about on commentary, because that was a common critique of Larry, right? Is that he would oftentimes, you know, talk bad about guys' techniques and matches and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then he comes out and he actually does the stuff that he's talking about.
He kind of backs it up. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, wow, that again added his credibility. And made him a more credible announcer in my eyes, because I never, you know, before that, I didn't give one crap about Larry Zbyszko. But after this match, I gave at least half a crap about Larry Zbyszko's commentary. So, like, he gained some prestige in my eyes to say, okay, he knows what he's talking about. He can go.
You also think of him as such an old school wrestler that to come out of retirement, it's like, oh, God, this is going to be some roll around on the mat fuck fest type thing where there's no like it's not going to play well in the 1994 wrestling world, right? Mm-hmm. It's like he's game and he's hanging right in there doing the things that you would expect from a 1994 wrestler. So I think he adapted really well. He knew what he was doing with this little run, but you know, certainly complimented by Regal, who God, you know what I just thought of? We emphasize the little things that makes Regal stand apart from others. One of my favorites, I would never forgive myself if I didn't bring this up. The way when he pins someone, he drives
his forearm
right into the bridge of the nose. And so what does that do, really? It's like, it's not really so much keeping them down on, it's not forcing them down on the mat anymore. It's not giving him more leverage, but
it's just to make life miserable on them.
Yes.
It's forcing them when they kick out, it's going to hurt that much, that much worse than if they just didn't kick out. And against lesser opponents, you got to figure some guys would be like, fuck it, he's got me.
Yep. This is a guy, who was so interesting to watch all the time because on one hand, he knew when to beg off and when to be afraid of the baby face. And he would be, he would look like he was terrified. Like he was scurrying away to get away. And yet he, when he had to get aggressive, he had some of the most vicious offense. You would have those forearms in the nose. They just look like they hurt, you know, like then at one point he drops a knee directly on Larry's head. I'm like, oh my God, that's just brutal. And, you know, the, it's just so, he's almost like, I would say he's like the anti-Miz. Like the Miz is a guy that is this great, the Miz is a guy that's this great dickhead heel who does all the heel mannerisms perfectly, but he is not at all believable when he goes on offense because he's the softest wrestler in the history of the world. So it's like, but Regal, he is, he's like that, that dickhead heel that you want to see get his comeuppance. But when he's on offense, you believe he might actually beat your hero because he's that damn dirty, you know, just little things that, like those palm strikes to the ear and stuff like that. You know, that's just stuff to do that he does not to beat the opponent, but to hurt the opponent.
Yeah.
Really good. We didn't even select any of the classic Finley matches with Regal from 96. I mean, that's that we can save that for a future episode for sure. But this is a guy that had so many different sides to him as a performer, even though I know we've talked about he had a Regal style of match that he worked, which is true. However, he was such a multifaceted performer. It wasn't just about these sort of mat wrestling matches. It was also his facial expressions, his mannerisms, his character that he inhabited. Nothing he did in these matches ever did not fit his character. You would never see Regal even think about doing a dive in a match.
Oh my God.
That it wouldn't fit his character. He wouldn't do that. Regal very rarely went to the top rope at all. Occasionally he would, but very rarely. He only did things that made sense for that character to do. And that's something that I think gets lost sometimes in modern wrestling. Because Regal is just a master of it. Tremendous.
So I was wondering if you guys did have any honorable mentions. I feel like we kind of mentioned them without, you know, spending a lot of time with them. But we had no shortage of options, I felt like, with his body of work. You know, mentioned the Goldberg match, the Marquis or the Duchess, whatever, of Queensbury.
Yeah, whatever. Something about Queensbury.
Something about Queensbury with Flair. You know, you've got multiple other Zabisco matches.
The Sting match that we already reviewed, of course.
We already did the Sting match. Yeah. Otherwise, I probably would have picked that.
Finley at Uncensored and Finley on Nitro.
Yep, the parking lot brawl on Nitro.
Oh, God.
So I think I've seen that.
Yeah, that's on the April 29th, 96 Nitro. One of the more original, unique matches you'd see on a 96 TV wrestling show.
He had a small handful of very good matches with Rey Mysterio.
Forget about those.
Over the TV title, I believe. Regal just had a lot of, some of his Johnny B. Badd matches were really good.
Yeah. Oh God. The, not so much matches, but grooming Bobby Eaton to be a proper gentleman.
Oh my gosh. Brown cow?
Jenny must see these if you haven't.
I think I have seen those.
Yes. It's the creation of the Blue Bloods.
Yeah.
So good.
It's basically sweetheart Bobby Eaton that he is being turned into a heel without realizing it. Because
Regal
he's just
being completely disgusted by his terrible Alabama banners.
I was gonna say he's from Alabama.
From Huntsville, Alabama. Bobby Eaton. 1990 Diamond Cutting Bobby Eaton. I love Bobby Eaton so much.
Yeah, repeat after me.
In the restaurant scene, it's just so amazing. God, I have to watch that entire.
They didn't get enough out of Regal in terms of letting him do the backstage vignettes and stuff that he got to do later in the WWE, because they had a gold mine there with stuff after the Blue Bloods. I mean, Regal was we would learn over the years how good Regal is as just an actor and a performer and entertainer. And that's the one area that I think WCW could have gotten more out of him than they did. Because I could have watched stuff like those Blue Blood skits forever. Like,
yes,
so good.
They always had Gene Okerlund interview him, because I think mm-hmm. Gene would get so tickled.
Yep.
Because he never knew what Regal was going to say. And he would practically corpse when I have to imagine Regal just improvising, you know, on the spot. Just
yeah,
very underrated.
You could tell because Gene would do that, put the finger over his mouth thing, and kind of mm-hmm. look down a little bit. And that was when he was about, because mm-hmm. Gene's the greatest of all time at
yes
that what he did. I mean, it's nobody should even attempt it after him. He set the standard too high. But yeah, so good. Regal's a great interview, great performer in the ring, out of the ring. A guy that really I wish was more appreciated in his time. But I think people looking back know how good he was, particularly in the WCW days. I think that some of his WWE run I wasn't the biggest fan of. Mm-hmm. When they made him kind of really serious all the time and stuff, which they tend to do with other comedic characters, Kevin Nash. But I still was able to enjoy like his when they would let him show his comedic side in WWE.
Yeah.
And he just had a brilliant career, a guy that and in WCW, that version of the character in particular is one that will always stand out in my head as one of the great characters of his era.
No doubt. We love him. We love him as a commentator as well.
Mm-hmm. We do quite
absolutely.
A lot.
Absolutely.
He is the highlight of NXT that we're watching, no yes. doubt.
Yes.
Good right. Good man, that Regal.
Anything else before we wrap it up?
I can't think of anything else to add on Regal. I do have, well, maybe we're going to set this up, but I've already determined, I believe it's my turn to select.
Okay.
Yes, let's do it.
I was going to ask whose turn it was next. Yeah.
And I have already determined, I predetermined it. We're going, because we focused a lot on sort of early 90s WCW recently, so I want to move it a little bit later in the decade.
Sure.
Okay. And I want to focus on one of my favorite wrestlers of the 90s and one of my favorite WCW characters of all time, and that is the man. His real name is Scott Levy, the man we all know as what Ooh. About him? What about Raven?
Oh,
Raven. I like it.
I like it too.
Oh, we get to do a Raven episode.
Yeah, I'm stoked for this.
The wax poetic about the flock. Yes.
In 1998, he may have been my favorite, other than obviously Bret Hart accepted.
Okay.
And Sting, of course. He may have been my favorite wrestler in the business that year. Him and Chris Jericho were like neck and neck as my favorite wrestler at that point.
May have gotten me back into wrestling because he was such a good heel.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've told that story probably, but.
But I want to hear it again because I'm stoked about this episode because Raven meant a lot to me in that era. I think people don't understand how much Raven connected with people, both positively and negatively at that time. And I don't think people appreciate how important Raven was to the elevation of Chris Benoit as
yep.
what he would later become. Mm-hmm. So there's just so much to that character. To me, as everybody talks about Jericho and Eddie and Benoit as these big missed opportunities for WCW, I think Raven is near the top for me. And we'll talk about that on that episode, I think. But I would have 100% bought him as a world champion.
Oh, man. Okay, so to be clear, though, we must choose Raven matches.
No Scotty Flamingo.
Flamingo.
No
is Scotty ineligible.
We'll do a Scotty Flamingo episode maybe one day. So this is strictly Raven.
Strictly Raven, man.
That's so Raven.
I love you for that.
Hopefully, we will bring that to you sooner than like 3 months.
Right.
fingers crossed.
We tried.
Greg, is there anything that you want to promote?
I'm trying to think. No, not really. My Twitter handle is gphillips8652. You can follow me there and see random garbage. And other than that, Nick and I may be doing a mini pod blast thing soon, but we don't know. We're kind of batting it around some ideas. But other than that, no, I don't have anything to promote. Just if anybody out there is wealthy and would like to donate to me so I don't have to go to work, contact me via Twitter and we'll talk.
Okay. Wow. Wonder if anybody takes you up on that.
I mean,
no matter what I have
I
to know do.
I could just ask for money like that. That's pretty good.
Hey, what? Yeah, you miss
it's not illegal, right?
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah. Bold. I like it. What about you, Tim?
I am likewise for sale. If you would like to send me money so that I don't have to work, I mean, we're not talking about what we will do in return. It's
No. This is strictly a donation. This is
strictly a financial transaction. Yeah. Which you can do by DMing me on Twitter. I am at Cyke68, Cyke68, where I like things sometimes, rarely retweet them, and rarely tweet anything of my own, but can be reached through that venue. Have some other podcasts with you, Jenny, where we talk about the great commentary of one Sir William Regal on PTB NXT. Now we have to endure that with some not so great commentary around his episodes as well. But he puts them to shame at least once per show on PTB NXT, I feel like. So check that out. We do that with our good friend Jacob Williams on this very same podcast feed. We also have shows on the Jenny Position. That is your feed that you curate, Jenny. Mm-hmm. The Jenny Position. Subscribe today if you're not already, where you can find us on the Journey Through Infinity, going chronologically through all the movies of the MCU. Chronologically, I mean in the order they were released, not the anyway.
Actual chronology.
You understand what that means? Yeah. Where we just covered Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. So more than halfway through that journey, the journey, if you will. We allegedly have a podcast called Talking Pop, which I'll talk to you about after
production meeting time.
Yes. So that exists as well. And on the aforementioned North Cal connection. North South Connection. Top Cow. North South Connection podcast. We're getting bungee. Where we do a show, a comics based show called Shrink Wrapped. Mm-hmm. The Psychology of Superheroes. That is also with our good buddy Sean Kidd. And most recent episode, we try to make it topical, tie in a little bit to the phenomenon sweeping the nation. Everyone coming up to the airport right now asking us what's going on with WandaVision. And so we looked at the first Vision and Scarlet Witch limited series, 4-issue limited series from Marvel, 1982, which has more bearing on the show than you might realize. But do check that out if you're comics fans, if you're WandaVision fans, and I've talked enough. So, Jenny?
All right, my turn. Yeah. I think you did half my plugs.
Well, I tried to so that we could,
See? That's how that
works. Share the labor here.
On that podcast feed, The Jenny Position, I have a new episode of You Heard About Pluto. Me and John D'Amato watched Happy Days, the two horniest episodes that we could find, which works out. And
how much did Joni love Chachi?
A lot.
Oh, good.
These are the episodes with full frontal nudity, right?
Well, not quite, but close enough for Happy Days.
Oh, okay.
Also, I have a show called Bianca's First Time. We most recently watched Mrs. Doubtfire, so that was horrible and traumatic. Much funnier when I was a younger child. And I already talked about Maddie. I'm trying to remember all of my shit. Oh, Hot Tokes. So Hot Tokes is a new show on my feed with my friend from Twitter, Vanessa Shark. We both like marijuana, and we wanted to have a podcast to teach and entertain about everything weed related. So we had our first intro episode last month, and that was really fun. These are sort of quick hit, like 30 minute things, just random topics. Our next one we already recorded is really fun. It's the history of marijuana. So we get into that a little bit. And so that's a little bit of a niche show, but pretty fun. Anyway, and Vanessa is amazing, so always going to plug her. You can find me at Jenny Position on Twitter.
We're all plugged out.
We're plugged out, and you know what? We're all wet for more Regal matches, so we're all going to go watch some more of those.
Hell yeah.
Thanks for listening.